Well, a very good evening to you, and thank you for tuning into Terrace Talk here on Radio Kerry. We're live here, of course, in the Tralee studio on a nice enough evening, actually. We're not having much rain and we're not having much sunshine, so it's kind of a nice old evening. Stay with us, Dawn Barry, between 8 o'clock this evening. Now, we all know it is Tyrone that's standing in the way of Kerry, as things are really going hot up in the search for Sam, of course, over the next week or so. And we'll be chatting to John O'Dowd there of the Kerry Men for a bit of reaction to that draw around 6:25 tonight. John, of course, was also in Tullamore on Saturday as the Kerry Minor Footballers exited the Championship, of course, at the semi-final stages with a loss to Monaghan. And I think it'd be remiss if we didn't thank and congratulate our Kerry Miners for all the work and time and effort that they've put into wearing that jersey and playing over the Championship as well. They've given us plenty of good moments as well, and of course they have a Munster medal in the bag, and I'm sure hopefully we'll see a good bit more of some of those players over the years, and indeed we'll probably see some of them again next year. So very well done, boys. Not this year, but sure it'll come again. But what are your thoughts on the Tyrone game? And they're the questions we're going to fire out to you this evening. No panel, of course, in studio this evening, so we're going to let you fire every question you have at me. It's on Saturday, 3:45. Is it a good day for it? Some people thought it was going to be on Sunday. I know Saturday. Is it a good time, even 4:20 above in Dublin? Do you have to get are you getting the train up, or are you getting the car up, or are you going to stay overnight? Could you even get accommodation if you try to get accommodation in Dublin? What about the fact that it's not on RT? I know I've met a good few people already giving out about that, and of course it's on GA Go once again, so you better get your tenner out again for it. And it's kind of strange enough as well that it's another non-free to ear game for Kerry supporters, or is it just Kerry supporters getting hit with this, or is that the price of being All-Ireland champions? And of course the most important question: are we good enough to beat Tyrone? There's a train of thought out there that, you know, Tyrone are the team that we really need to get over, and it's a big game for the Kingdom, and you know, hopefully you get there. Get up to Croke Park, support the boys, and if you have any thoughts, give Ivan a call there this evening. He's back with us this week. 0667123666, or text or WhatsApp us there on 083 300 3300, and there's a few comments coming in already, and we'll give them an old call out as well when they come in. But first this evening, I suppose we're going to look back over the weekend's action. There's plenty of action at the weekend here in Kerry, because the Garvey Super Value Senior Hurling Championship, it's beginning to hot up now a bit, because I suppose two of the nine teams are already departed after a busy two rounds of games. I'm delighted to have this evening joining us on the phone James McCarthy and Richard O'Foran, and welcome back, lads. And we'll look back, James, I suppose, at the two rounds played first. Don't be jumping up and down or eliminating teams or anything. There's a bit of shadow boxing. The fare that you've seen so far, James, is it good fare? Is it all over the place? Are teams just going to psyching each other out? Or is there actually quite a lot of good hurling played in those six games?
There's been good hurling, patches of good hurling in all the games. But you can see, as we said, Donald, we talked about this before, you can see the difference in the top teams and the teams that are not up there at that level. You can see the difference, and it's happened in a few of the games. They've been lopsided, like, a little bit. Like, maybe the first game, Causeway and Kilmarnie, was a true game. That was a real true game, two top teams. And luckily enough, Kilmarnie got the goals and Mike came through. And looking at the other games, there was no real other contest bar yesterday's game as well, which was for a long time. St. Brendan's College was another very good game, until sending off really turned the game. So the other games really have all been lopsided. Lickstair, big win. Ballydoff, a big win. Crosshair, big win. Abidorny, big win. There was nothing really. And those games, and like, it's a pity now, because those groups are actually settled. Like, as you said, Crokes are gone and Ballyhale are gone. So it's like, it's only a matter of who finishes first and second, really. It's a pity. Those games are like, we're not actually dead rubbers, but they're just decided positions, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Richard, we James omitted one of the other teams that have eliminated. He mentioned Crokes, of course. Ballyhaig as well. But to be fair to Ballyhaig, I've been watching, I suppose, the games and the team sheets and the whole lot. And it's difficult, because through injury, they were down possibly two of the most promising Kerry hurlers that played this year, and that takes a huge effect on it. So must you kind of be ready at this level with your best men by your side, particularly in these games?
Yeah, and James did mention Ballyhaig. James, I never missed the opportunity to say but yeah, I think it was the loss of Michael and Colin, and we were obviously for the first games we were missing Brian and Rory. You know, we can't afford to be missing guys like that. That's just the way it is, because our side are very, very young. And when you have the likes of Michael and Colin, they're steadying influences, I suppose. And Michael Lean is like the conductor. He you know, he organises the thing. He's a great man to sort of drive on the younger lads. And he was a massive loss, as was Colin, in that game. But, you know, we're a young side. I think we'll come again. But we were caught, obviously, perhaps our lack of experience really caught us. And, you know, inside Nassau Stack Park, you will be caught out if you're not up to speed. But they're a young side. They'll come again. But certainly was a learning experience for them. And, you know, there'll be better days ahead. But very disappointed. You know what I mean? Because they're a good bunch and they're a committed bunch. But look, as I said, they're young and they'll be better days ahead.
Absolutely. I think that's the same for all teams. James, just looking at that Group A, of course, Lixna, Ballyduff, Ballyhig. It was never going to be easy for Ballyhig to get possibly out or ahead of Lixna and Ballyduff. Ballyduff the first night, though, they 4:20, I mean, they really kind of ignited things pretty much in the Ballyhig or the Ballyduff way as well. You know, goals, their big men performing as well. Was that a good opening salvo from Ballyduff, or are we going to really have to see what they're like against Lixna before we can start running around saying they're possible favourites?
No, they're up there. They're up there. Don't let the fact do. They're very, very powerful in the air. They have good finishers inside, as you say, inside Sack Park. When you get the championship time, if you don't have the finishers, you're in trouble. They have good finishers and they have good players, so they will be there. That's no disrespect to Ballyhig, but Hike that evening was just overrun by a very, very powerful team. But Lixna will not give the room that the Bella forwards got against Ballyhig. Ballyhig that night, as Richard says, didn't have to, like, without Michael Lean's influence at centre back, maybe they left too much space. They left 50 or 60 yards for good forwards like Kevin Goulding, Podge Boyle, even though Podge Boyle lasted a quarter of an hour. Mikey Boyle ran the pitch that evening. He was absolutely superb. He was excellent that evening. He ran the whole game. They had Kevin Goulding, they had Dylan Moriarty, a lot of good lads that got scores for them. They were very good. Owen Ross midfield, they were very, very strong. And they're very impressive. But Lixna, as you say, these games, those kind of games and feeling each other out. But these games now where Lixna play better off, cross with Kerry Dorney, Kilmaley against Affert, we'll see where we really are, where all teams really are. And mm-hmm. see who is, as we say, I still can't see beyond the top four, and maybe I could be right.
Maybe I could be right. Very modest, James. Maybe I could be right. Come here, something unique happened. Mikey Boyle's son Killian, did he come on in one of those games, did he?
He did, the very first game, exactly, in fairness. And Mikey talked to Mikey afterwards, and so he said, a nice experience from South Lake, that Gavin Dooley and Mike Dooley for Causeway, and now you have Mikey and Killian, and it was brilliant with Killian. Killian's only a young lad, he was on the Kerry in the 20s with us this year, like, yeah. A good promising young hurler, like another boy coming through the bell of ranks. Like, it's not good for us to really use it.
I know, it is quite a special moment. He scored a free as well, and to be on the, and not only be on the game with your father, but be on the team sheet as well. And of course, Philip Lucid, I suppose, two massive sideline cuts yesterday as well in the game against Bell. Hig, fine scores.
Oh, they were excellent. They were top class. Only he was, and both sides of the pitch, they were both 40 or 50 yards out from the left side and from the right side. They were special scores. Philip Noah was excellent yesterday, and Richard was there at the match as well. He said, like, Philip was, he was really carrying the torch for Valley High yesterday. A beaten team on a beaten Dockers as they don't, he really stood out, and that's a good testament to the man himself, like, in fairness to him.
Absolutely, finished up with 9 points, of course, and as I said, six frees and those two sideline cuts, which are fabulous. Let's move on to Group B, Richard. Group B, of course, is Abidorny, Crotta and Crokes. And I suppose, much like Ballyhig, I suppose, Crokes were going to come into this maybe possibly thinking they were a little bit closer to Abidorny and Crotta, but Abidorny and Crotta have really pushed forward a good bit this year, have they?
They have, sure, Abidorny. Look at their league form. Do you know what I mean? They didn't have anybody on the Kerry team, so they were able to concentrate totally on the league, and they're firing. They're absolutely really on fire. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As are Crotta as well. Shane Nolan is playing great hurling there as well, with others. So, you know, you have two very good sides again, and a bit like us, Crokes were going to be really up against it with against two teams like that. Now, again, great credit to Crokes. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's a lonely old forward down there. But fair play to them. You know, they're working hard and they're developing under Aidan O'Mahony. But a bit like us, it was going to be a bridge too far.
Yeah, absolutely. It proved a bridge too far as well, particularly in the goaling threat. I suppose Abidorny scoring 4 goals and Crotta scoring 4 as well. The one thing about Abidorny in the first night as well, I mean, they scored 4-17, Richard, but they had 17 wides as well. I mean, that's an incredible amount of chances created in one match.
Ah, it is, but you're looking, you have the big man, you have Michael O'Leary, he was on fire. And it's great to see Oisín Mansell back as well, because Oisín, like, is a, he's a fine talent, you know, and obviously football and hurling, and he has been dogged by injury. But great to see him back, and he scored a goal as well. And so, yeah, I mean, they're a fantastic side, Abidorny, and, you know, they'll put it up to any team.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Crota as well yesterday, of course. I mean, Crota for 28-115. An awful lot of big names, though, not playing for Crota. Injured or sitting on the bench, Richard? I mean, Jordan Conway didn't play, as far as I know. And they were missing, Killian Trent and Ryan McKelligott and Barry Mahoney as well. So, I mean, that would be quite pleasing to know that they have them possibly to come back maybe in the short term or certainly in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm unaware as well as to whether they were being rested, you know, or whether injured, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But again, the lads you mentioned there are great lads to be able to bring back in. I mean, Trent played there for Kerry, and, you know, I mean, we know what Jordan Conway can do. I mean, a man as well, I suppose, who's been affected an awful lot by injury, but he's an unbelievable talent. And if you put ball into the corner into Jordan, like, you know, he's very, very good.
Yeah, absolutely. James, Group C, your own group, of course, Kilmiley, Causeway and St Brendan's. It was meant to be the group of death, and it's going to shape up a bit that way. Even though Brendan's lost yesterday, they still get one more chance of kind of upsetting the apple tart. But how big was that first win for Kilmiley over Causeway? I mean, it was a fantastic game, 4-13 to 1-15. Of course, Morris O'Connor, he had an outstanding night that night. Did he get four goals? Did he got three goals? He definitely got
three or four. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Don't we spoke about it? Kilmiley, and you know what I said.
You said you couldn't score.
I said Kilmiley, our form was not good. Our league form was not good. I'd be joking myself right here if I could see that result coming against Causeway. I would have been foolish to say that. I did not see that result coming. That performance though was excellent, but that's only a starting point as such. We have, there'll be much sterner tests ahead. Causeway that evening maybe talked they came at us for a while as well, like, very close. We just got goals. There are going to be nights where Marcy Connor's not going to get three goals. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have to see how much steel is in this Kilmiley team. There's a lot in this, but we really have to dig in again now. Like, even with the St Brendan's match now again on Sunday, I think it's on Sunday afternoon now because of the Kerry match on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But that's still, we still want to go in the front door. Kilmiley have always looked at that. We want to win the top of the group. We want to go straight to the semi-final. That's always been our target. That doesn't change now on Sunday. Whether St Brendan's won or lost last weekend, it doesn't matter to us. It was always going to be the target, try and go this weekend, get another win and top the group. So Causeway now in a nice position as well. They've had a great performance now yesterday. That game was in the Melton for a long time, so I saw it was in the Melton for a long time.
Would it be fair to say it kind of turned a little bit on I suppose Darren Dineen's, I suppose, clumsy tackle or whatever you want to say it was when they went down to 14 men?
Oh, it changed the whole game, Donald. Against Causeway are very, very good with that extra man. Very, very good. And they had players like Keith Carmey. I thought Keith Carmey was superb. Mm. Jason Higgins was a lot better yesterday than he was against us. Brendan Barrett, midfield, did a big job on Fionn Maxey. Fionn Maxey was on the main place for St Brendan's, couldn't get into the game because Brendan was just stuck to him all day long. Didn't help Conor Harty flying again, and they were very, very good. Gavin Dooley, I thought, inside caused a lot of trouble. But early on, St Brendan's really were causing Causeway trouble, caused them a lot of trouble inside. And they could have they missed four or five frees in a row, caused them desperate trouble early on. Fionn Egan and Shawnee Brosnan inside were getting ball. And with that, St Brendan's had retreated a sweeper. It was a very good game, actually, in fairness. I enjoyed the first half, but when the player got sent off, the whole complexion of the game just changed, and Causeway had a goal straight after virtually within 5 or 10 minutes. It was game over. There was no comeback. Just go, there's no way back for St Brendan's, and it's a pity because the game was really hot enough to be something really good, in fairness.
Absolutely. Well, we better, for fairness, ask the next question, so, and leave you out of it. Kilmiley and St Brendan's. I suppose, to be fair to St Brendan's, I mean, they played reasonably well for the first half. Like I said, they went down to 14 men. If you kind of distorted, maybe at the end, 11 points sounds like a huge margin, but it didn't feel like an 11-point win for Causeway. I suppose in hurling, you can kind of rack up the points fairly quickly in a matter of minutes and you're out the gate. Have St Brendan's a chance against Kilmiley?
Well, I suppose if I were a betting man, I would say Kilmiley will win the game. I think that the loss of Darren Dineen will be massive. No standing horror. And I think perhaps Kilmiley would have too much for them. And that's how I call it. But yesterday as well, I mean, it was a very enjoyable game. We stayed on. It was a really enjoyable game. And I suppose sending off really destroyed it, because, you know, it was a great, great backing up to them, and it turned on that sending off. There was some really good performance, I thought. Causer as well. I mean, Cameron played really, really well. I thought Joseph Diggins also played very good. They're still, I think the loss of Daniel Goggin is going to be massive for Causeway. I know he was on Punches areas, but that's the one thing, like, it's a massive loss for them. But I think that Kilmiley will top the group there.
Of course, Abbey Dorney and Crotty will fight each other to top the group as well, Richard. Both had similar enough wins, I suppose, over Dr. Crokes as well. I mean, 4-17, 4-28. I mean, Crotty, of course, maybe a little bit more free scoring. How do you see that game going, Richard?
That's a very, very difficult one to call. I think with the likes of Michael O'Leary playing outstanding, with like Shane Nolan, and I leave that one up to James. You asked me to call him. And James did not like it. James did not like it. You want me to get in trouble, you know?
Hang you with that.
Well, James carries a hurley around North Kerry all the time, so to protect himself. So James, Abbey Dorney or Crotty? And of course, it does matter. I mean, both are into next round as such, but winning Kerry is, I suppose, the chance of going a little bit further into semi final if you get out of a bowl again. So winning is certainly number one on bottom. And Abbey Dorney, of course, as I said, the league form has been quite good. They would have been happy to start with a big win as well. Would this be kind of a big test now for Abbey Dorney?
Yeah, serious test. Pacey the quarterbacks are missing the four lads. Like, Barry was injured, and I think the two lads have actually gone away. Killian and Jordan are not around, so they're not available anyway. So it's just a pity, because that would be some game. That would really be some game, because I fancy Abbey Dorney in that game to win, to tell the truth. I like the look of them. I like the cut of them. I've said it with the top four, Donal. If they really want to announce themselves, don't be beating Crokes. Don't be blowing yourself up about beating Crokes. Beat one of the top four in a game that matters. Beat them in a game that matters, which I talk about a quarter final or a semi final. Beat them there. Don't be beating them in the group. That's no good to you. Wasting your time. Beat the top teams when it matters, and then we can say, right, these teams are a serious threat now. Until that happens, I'm still banking on my top four boys. And I'll stick with that.
My God, you won't move at all. Come here, banking on your top four boys, Ballyduff and Lixnaw. I mean, that already has the cut of a real championship ding-dong battle. How do you see that one going, James?
Looking to tell you the truth, Lixnaw or Ballyduff would be too powerful for them. Lixnaw maybe needs another game. They need another good game like that. But I like the shape of Lixnaw yesterday. I like the shape. They seem to have a real game plan. They seem to be really well set up. There's a lad with them now, Hennessy, on the sideline from Limerick. Good lad. They've good setup. They've good players. They've all the players they want. Even Derek Conway was back there yesterday. Shane Conway was around there. Darren Shanahan. They look good. They still bring on Mike Conway. They had the last 20 minutes. The first ball into me, picks it up, taps it over there. The class is still there. They will need all those elements. Tweaky was injured yesterday. I was talking to him afterwards. He's still in the melting pot. Lixnaw will be very serious around there. And there will be a serious threat against Ballyduff, but they will see themselves looking for a quarter final or semi final. They want a cut off that again, and they'll be around there. I'm telling you, but that Ballyduff team, physically, I think they'd be too strong for them. And Ballyduff, I think at the minute, are the most powerful team in the air in the championship. They're very, very good in the air. If you're playing Ballyduff, you've got to get out of the air very quickly, because they will take care of you. They'll do a job on you. They'll do a number on you.
Yeah, Richard James's point there, of course, by going through the front door straight away. But like Ballyduff and Lixnaw know that they lose tomorrow, they're still in the championship. Abbey Dorney and Crotty know as well. If they lose next week, they're still in the championship. Does that mindset make it easier to head into this game, knowing that, look, we can have one right battle at it, or maybe we mightn't show our hand at all?
Well, there's a safety net there, of course. So when you're going into it, you can give it a good crack, because you know, if you lose, you'll still be in the championship. That said, as James said there, most teams would like to finish top. And I think that would be the thing, I'd say, you know, because you're hoping for a better draw then, you know, in the next round. So I think teams will try and finish first, but obviously it'll take away from the competitive nature of it, obviously, if you know there's a safety net there. That's natural.
James, a question that came in already, a couple of comments, of course, and I suppose we won't drill down individual players, but can you see the Kerry players standing out from the club players, or would you know the difference at the moment? That's the question.
You do. You can see a lot of them, but then again, I see the old class as well. John Egan yesterday, I thought, was absolutely superb. I really had to tap my hat to myself. Jesus, that man, I don't know what age John is. I won't disrespect him by giving him an age. Instead of Stephen Lever and Half Hour, they're on the good for years now, and I thought they were absolutely superb. We all throughout that game, but looking at you, say the Kerry players, the extra bit of class is there. The extra bit of class is there, and that's why they are the best players in their club, and that's why the best players in their team, and that's why they're some of the best players we have in the county. You can't see it, but the gap isn't much. It's not that much. There are good hurlers all over the place. You can't go into town now with a weak link. I know myself, you'll be found out very, very quickly. So if your fella's on top of the standard, a good Kerry player, or even a good player maybe just below the standard of that, maybe on the panel, he'll do a number and you'll be caught out very, very quickly.
Rich Dart, from what you've seen so far, I mean, it's shaping up to be a very good championship.
It is indeed, and as James has said there, the one positive as a Ballyhigman that I would take from the championship is, you know, as a Kerry man, is that the number of guys who we may have available next year for the Kerry hurlers, you know, I mean, obviously Morris O'Connor, Michael O'Leary, you know, and lads like that, they're you know, Darragh Conway, and we've Slattery, and we have and we've Moriarty back for Bideuff as well, you know, so that is a very, very positive thing for Kerry hurling. But yeah, it's shaping up to be, it's absolutely going to be a brilliant championship, and now, you know, this is the business end of it now as we're heading towards that, it's going to be fantastic. And you know, it's a showcase of Kerry hurling, you know what I mean, so hopefully we'll have a good the rest of the championship will be good. Now it'll be competitive, as I said. I hope that we'll produce some good players for the county team.
Mm-hmm. And of course that is another part of the whole lot of it. Of course, the first part is to get our hands on the Flynn Cup and parade it around North Kerry for 6 months, but obviously getting players on board in the Kerry team a vital part of that as well. James, final one for you, and of course it is quite funny, generations, we kind of mentioned it with the Boyles coming through, and of course the Dooleys as well, a lot of same names coming through the same clubs. Even Shane Nolan is still hanging around with Crotta as well. It really drills down the fact that clubs are kind of just big family units.
They really are. It's tradition. And I've been involved with Camogie for a lot of years. They're sisters and their wives and girlfriends. They're in there too. Don't forget about them. I've come across Conway's in Camogie, and I've come across other people's Boyles in Camogie. They're there as well. So it's tradition. You've got a strong family. The backyard is Croke Park. Your backyard, your house is Croke Park. You have three or four brothers and sisters. You're all out there. And the sisters come through as well, and the brothers come through. So I think it's absolutely superb. And like, my brother played with me up to minors, and he gave up after that. He had too many other things to be doing. You know, it's always nice to play with your family. And like, it's a brilliant thing with that. Like, it's, and I'm sure when the lads do it, the boys do, when they win a championship with your own brothers, it's a really special thing. And then you see the sons coming through afterwards, like, and it's, that really, really knocks it home to you, like, how really it's a family affair. It always is a family affair, and it is a family affair. And North Kerry people, we're so close knit that we're never too far away from each other. We all know what's happening in the next door neighbour's house. So, like, we all know what's going on, and it's great to see all these communities still thriving with the same old familiar names, like the Conways, the Boyles, the Dooleys, all these. I mean, like, the Egans and Affert, they're still around, they'll all still be there, and the Murnans and Keep Wiley, they'll be back around, they have children coming up along the line too, but maybe 10 or 15 years down the line, but they're coming as well. Those names will always be around.
And even the Four Ons are on the team sheet out in Ballyhig as well.
Well, whatever James McCarthy says, there is no truth in the room with the Rich Dardo Four Ons making a comeback to be alongside his son.
to be a big step up to senior for you, right, Rich Dard? Come here, guys. Listen, thanks very much. Fabulous once again by both of you. Guys, you're certainly taking on John and Lima as pundits. We might have a pundit vote off maybe, Ivan, at the end of the year to see who's more popular, the hurling guys or the football guys. I think he'd be in with a shout of winning that, I'd say. But for now, guys, thanks very much. And that was, of course, coverage of Garvey Super Value Senior Hurling Championship Round 2. Of course, 2 games gone, 6 games gone. 9 teams entered, 7 teams left. And that's it. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're listening to Terrace Talk until 8 o'clock. Donal Barry with you this evening in the hot seat. And by God, we asked you for comments, but my God, they're coming at a rate and not we can hardly type them out. And all pretty much on the same manner of means as well. And most of you absolutely distraught at the fact that it's on a Saturday and even more angrier that you can't see it on RTE. But anyway, some of the comments. Hi Donal, it's a disgrace that the All-Ireland champions are not shown on RTE for the fourth time. That's from a very disappointed Tarbert listener who's still up the kingdom. I presume he'll still be over in Croke Park supporting him anyway. Resupporting Kerry next Saturday. The early trains are all sold out for a long time now due to a longitude concert in Dublin next Saturday and Sunday. And that's making it far more difficult for Kerry supporters. And that's from Tim. Good evening, Tim. Thanks for your comment. The Ring of Kerry is on Saturday also. It's unfair to Kerry fans. Regards, Jay Go. Kerry are the All-Ireland champions and have no RTE time. Yeah, we haven't really featured on any live game on RTE yet. Hi all, great show as always. Just like to say it's the Kingdom and Tyrone. Two teams not as convincing as other years, and that's a very valid point. We all know what to expect of Tyrone. If Kerry are to come good, it's time for other forwards to contribute. Tyrone will mark Paddy and double mark David with the sweeper. We know the script. Unless we get big performances from other players, it will be a tough one to edge. And that's from Brendan in Boston. And Brendan, thanks very much for tuning in to us over in Boston as well. Nice to know we have a few people on the other side of the Atlantic as well. Now what's up next? Now, of course, it was the end of the road for our Kerry minor football team on Saturday after they went down 111 to 11 points to Monaghan, who have set up a unique enough clash, I'd say, in an All-Ireland final with Derry, who dispatched Dublin fairly convincingly yesterday. And that's a unique final, Monaghan versus Derry. Maybe it's the way the world is going too. But there on Saturday watching and writing, of course, for the Kerrymen was John O'Dowd. I'm delighted to have John on the line now. John, I suppose I was at the community games on Saturday, of course, and people following it on Twitter and the whole lot, but there was a sense of feeling from Kerry Athletic fans anyway that this was a game that went away and it was a game that was kind of turned on a somewhat fortuitous goal. Would that be a fair statement to make, or was there a bigger story than that?
Without a shadow of a doubt, Donal, I think you'd have to say that the game did change on that goal, just the very, very last act of the first half. At the time, Kerry had gone ahead by 2 points, 7 points to five. And initially, Monaghan had made the better start, and they had tactically, they had done a lot to stop the best players in the Kerry team. We can discuss that a bit more in a minute. But the goal, it actually, there was meant to be 2 minutes of injury time. This went into the third minute of injury time. A free kick from 45 metres. The player, Tommy Mallon, didn't even strike it well. And do you know sometimes when you're at a game, Donal, and you get a premonition that something bad is about to happen? I had that kind of premonition in my mind just as the free was about to be taken, that something bad was going to happen. And to be fair to the goalkeeper, who's been one of the standout players for this Kerry minor team this year, and he is a really promising player, James Hoare, he did exactly what you would ask him to do. He commanded his area. He decided, this ball is mine. I'm going to go and catch it, and I'm going to relieve the danger, and we're going to get in at half time with our 2 point lead. And all of a sudden, the ball just slips through his fingers, goes behind him. Ben Murphy does his best to punch it off the line, but all he can do is divert it further into the net. And it was a catastrophic blow to Kerry just before half time, and they didn't recover definitely for 10 or 15 minutes into the second half.
And of course, I suppose it's minor football as well. I mean, something that dramatic happens to a senior team or a county league team or even the Kerry senior team, it takes a little longer to get back into the game. Kerry kind of failed, I suppose, to produce a lot of better stuff or good stuff in the second half. Might have come from that as well. But Monaghan, I presume, played a role in that as well.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. Initially, when the game finished, Donal, my initial thoughts were that Monaghan deserved to win. And even though I probably do still feel that way, I had another look at the game this morning on video, and it really was a 50-50 affair, and Kerry had their chances to win it, especially the two goal chances that fell to Paddy Lane in the last couple of minutes of the game. So Kerry could have snuck it, but at the same time, as Wayne Quillan stated afterwards, Kerry couldn't play the game that they wanted to play, and that's exactly why you have to congratulate Monaghan on their tactical setup. I suppose it didn't make the game the most free-flowing of contests. Totally different to the quarter-final match between Kerry and Kildare. But Monaghan had their homework done. They placed the number 7
man-on-man on Paddy Lane, and they brought back their number 13, Tomás Quinn, to act as a sweeper just in front of Paddy Lane. They decided that Lane was the man to stop in the forward line and that Kerry wouldn't score enough if he was subdued to any great degree. And I suppose when you see the final result, Kerry finishing with 11 points, Monaghan were proven to be correct in that aspect. They also did the same in the first half to Evan Boyle. They pinpointed him as one of the people to keep quiet. They broke a lot of ball brilliantly in the first half, and they were always seemed to be first onto the breaks, Monaghan. They were hungrier for that breaking ball. And in fairness to Evan Boyle, he had a storm in the second half, especially the last 10 or 15 minutes down the close, catching some fierce ball, playing it in, Ben Murphy charging forward. But Monaghan did get their tactics right, but Kerry could still have won.
And I suppose they're the games that you walk away from the field, you know, sometimes it's good to be beaten and have no question marks, Sam. But overall, I mean, as campaigns go, I mean, they're Munster champions. They got to an All-Ireland semi-final. They beat Cork convincingly enough a second night, having been turned over the first night, and they played very good football against Kildare. I think there's far more positives in the ledger than negatives on this campaign.
Yeah, obviously, Donald, people in Kerry always look at, first of all, did the team win an All-Ireland? Did they get to an All-Ireland final, etc., etc.? But it's not as simple as that, especially since the minor age has gone to under 17. It really is more about development of players. Like, we have to remember when critiquing these games is that these lads are 15, 16, some maybe 17 years of age. They're taking baby steps in inter-county football. Okay, we've the likes of Evan Boyle, Paddy Lane and Padraig Moynihan were in the panel last year. But it's not easy to win these All-Irelands. Simple as that. Like, Kerry don't have a God-given right to win them either. Like, the disappointing thing, I suppose, when they look back on it, they'll feel that this was a winnable game. You know, if you don't let in that bad goal before half-time, if you convert one of those two goal chances that fell to Paddy Lane, and you have to credit the Monaghan goalkeeper for two fine saves as well, you know. But we lost this game very narrowly. You go back to last year's semi-final against Mayo, we lost by 2 points very narrowly, a game that could have been won. You even take the under-20s of the last 2 years against Sligo this year, a game we narrowly lost, could easily have won. Go back to Tyrone last year, a game we narrowly lost, could have won. Maybe that was a small bit different because of the individual brilliance of Rory Canavan. But the thing that will annoy and frustrate management of all those respective teams is, you know, like you say, if you were beaten out the gate by a much better team like Dublin were yesterday by Derry, it is more easy to accept the result. But you'll always have those little lingering regrets that you didn't get over the line in a game that was winnable. But of course, that doesn't take away from, you know, the fact that they did win the Munster final. They got revenge from the Cork defeat in the first match of the season. They got through a quarter final impressively against Kildare. And, you know, while they will be disappointed with yesterday, I think Wayne Crillon and his management can be well pleased overall with what they've done this season.
Yeah, I think that's very fair, and your point is valid. I mean, these are children really, I suppose, compared to the minors that we would have grown up with, where they were 18, nearly going on 19 and 20, some of them. Come here. The other big news, of course, this morning, everybody was fingers crossed and waiting for the draw. Of course, we obviously knew it was going to be one of two teams. Ironically enough, it was the team that half the county wanted and maybe half the county didn't want. Kerry versus Tyrone, I suppose it is what it is now. Is that a good draw for Kerry?
You'd have to say it was written in the stars, wouldn't you, Donald? Like,
or maybe it was written somewhere else.
when we knew it came down to Tyrone or Monaghan, you kind of just knew that it was going to be Tyrone. Similarly, you kind of knew that it was going to be Dublin against Mayo as well. Like, two absolute blockbuster games, and both teams obviously know each other exceedingly well. You know, Kerry will obviously look back at 2 years ago. You know, a lot of the same players will be still there, apart from David Moran. You know, and they know that Tyrone semi final was winnable. They conceded 3 goals. They didn't score a goal. They lost David Clifford to injury for the extra time period. David Moran had gone off, I think, for the extra time period as well. Two significant losses. Tyrone, They got the job done. Obviously, there was the fallout over the COVID and the match being delayed and this, that and the other. And, you know, obviously, Tyrone went on to win the All-Ireland then to give them their due, and that's the kind of team that they are, you know. It is a game that, while we haven't seen the best of Kerry in 2023 so far, Saturday is the day that we do have to see the best of Kerry, because anything less than the best, and Tyrone can beat you. It's as simple as that.
There's a game in every championship season, John, where you need to make a statement, you need to stand up, you need to win, you need to be counted. This really is Kerry's game. You know, maybe they might want to win the All-Ireland, but this is one that they have to win, they have to put down the marker. And I suppose, realistically, a lot of Kerry fans going up in hope more than expectation. But this is one that needs to be won from a Kerry perspective.
Yeah, 100%. This is the, if you go back to last year, it was the semi-final against Dublin. That was a game that had to be won, and it was an opposition that had to be beaten. It didn't matter how you got over the line, you just had to get over the line. And hence, the outpouring of emotion on the pitch, in the crowd, and all around Kerry after Sean O'Shea's monster last gasp free. You know, sometimes it's the opposition that you beat is just as important as the result itself. But, or rather, some results mean more than others from a psychological sense as well. There's obviously the history of Kerry Tyrone. There is the recent history of Tyrone winning that semi-final 2 years ago, and they are an opposition that that, you know, they're sticking the craw a little bit down here. You know, we don't like losing to them like we never like losing to Dublin. You know, and it is the day for Kerry to make a statement. They obviously moved closer to getting back to where they want to be with the loud performance. And as Jack O'Connor even said this evening, like, he wasn't despondent after the Cork game, because he knew that Cork had improved an awful lot. And we can see since Cork lost to Kerry, they've beaten Mayo and they've beaten Roscommon, and they're deservedly in the quarterfinal themselves. So maybe more should be read into Kerry's performance and getting over the line in Parkyfield that day. We are getting closer to where we want to be, but like, we don't know exactly where we are.
Yeah,
but we will know on Saturday evening by 5:15 exactly where we are.
Absolutely, we will. Yeah, next Monday night is going to be a fun Terrace Talk one way or the other. Three of the eight teams, of course, came out of the one group. How significant is that? That Mayo, Cork, Kerry all managed to get themselves away through, some qualifying automatically, of course. But still, it shows that the toughest group was the group Kerry came out of, and maybe Jack O'Connor has a lot of weight in his words when he says, you know, Mayo and Cork were good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people might have obviously Kerry got their round robin stage off on a complete downer with the defeat to Mayo in Killarney, but that opened management and players' eyes to a lot of faults that were still within the team game plan. You know, they had thought after the holiday in Portugal at the end of the league and from the games against Tipperary and Clare that they had an idea that they were coming back, and then the Mayo game just they fell flat on their backsides against Mayo. But that was important because it showed them the areas that they had to work on. Without that Mayo result, you might have seen they might have just come a cropper further on without being tested. Now they've steadied the ship at the back. They've got the midfield motoring again against Loud. The forwards are starting to help David Clifford a bit more, especially the movement and the flexibility now around Sean O'Shea's position is very important to David Clifford and to the overall functioning of the team. And with Gavin White and Paul Ganey expected to be fit for the weekend, we're getting closer to picking our first choice 15, and you'll need them because Tyrone are a formidable opposition. They have no fear of Kerry. They like beating Kerry above nearly any other team, so they will be ready for us and we have to be ready for them.
My God, John O'Dowd, I tell you, you'd give some team talk in a dressing room, I'd say, if you wanted to. You're the hair standing on our head now. Go out now and beat Tyrone for you. Of course, Tarbert beat Bale, did they?
Yeah, we got a good result yesterday, Donal. It was a vital game. It was pretty much a must-win encounter. Like, it was a stand-up and be counted type of day. There was nothing between the two teams. It was played like with all the ferocity of an North Kerry final. And luckily enough, you know, we came out on top by 2 points. So puts us in a decent position going into the last round. But nothing has been achieved yet. We still have one more test to go. We won't be underestimating our last opponents or anything like that. So, but yeah, it was a pleasing day at the office.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, after the break, of course, we're talking to Mark Murphy. He's going to round up the county league. Hopefully, he'll have enough time to get down to talk about Division 4, because obviously some other team in Division 4 had a good win yesterday as well that I meant to tell him about. He'll probably just want to talk about Division 1. But listen, John O'Dowd, thanks for joining us. Much appreciated. That's John O'Dowd, of course. And of course, you can read all that John writes very well as well in The Kerryman when it's out there on a Wednesday. And John, of course, will be covering all those matches all the way through as well. And a great Man to give his thoughts on the game. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now let's turn things back to club football, and I suppose it's what's happening in the Credit Union County League that'll keep us talking for the next couple of minutes. And I suppose most teams have 10 games played at this stage. There's a couple of them all right with 2 games left. And I suppose there's a lot of unknowns, and I suppose to help us plot out some answers maybe, and maybe even ask a few more questions, we decided to call upon the wisest of them all, I suppose, when it comes to rounding up County League matters. So we decided we could make one quick phone call to Mort Murphy, and he solve everything for us in the next 10 minutes. A quick round up, Mort. Mort, Division 1 is, looking at it, it's getting quite exciting. I mean, the County League is a great tournament, I suppose, or competition, game after game, and the whole lot, and points move on, teams run into form, and the whole lot. But let's look at the bottom of Division 1 first before we talk about the top. A lot of teams in trouble, and a lot of teams need to win fairly quickly.
Yeah, well, indeed. Yeah, good evening, Donal. Yeah, Division One. It's the logjam at the bottom that really is adding a lot of intrigue, and the final round is absolutely crucial for about 7 teams, would you believe?
Wow.
Now, Desmond obviously are relegated. They're gone down. They're 1 round left. They're only 3 points. But anyone from Kilcommon down, Kilcommon are 11 points. They should be okay. They're playing Rathmore in the final game. Rathmore have 10 points. But definitely the 10 points, if that's right, Morecambe's O'Reilly's and Milton Castlemaine, their need to get something out of the final game, depending on other results. Neamagill are on 9, Spar on 9, Dingle are on 8. Now, they have a game in hand. That's on this coming Sunday, I would say, this weekend. So, obviously, probably Sunday. They play Killarney Legion at home. And Killarney Legion, obviously, we'll talk to about a second, need to win that too, to tie with Croke at the top of the table. And Dingle need the points. Now, I think Dingle will win their final game because they're playing Desmond's. So I'm theoretically giving them 10 points, but that might not be enough. And then Austin Stacks, it's a huge game for Austin Stacks, their final game. Now, they won. They had to win yesterday, and they did. And they beat Kilcommon. Shane O'Callaghan getting 1-1 there. And Young and McGivigan, Dunner getting 4 points. They were always in control of that game, but they must play Neamagillagh in Neamagillagh, and Neamagillagh have only 9 points, and Neamagillagh came from behind yesterday. Are they late for a lot of the way? But it was goals from John O'Leary yesterday, and from Jack Crimmin, and also the goal that was crucial in the 58th minute was by their midfielder Ronan Collins, a good basketballer as well, by the way. They beat Ballymac, who had been flying. Ballymac had 2 losses, 6 wins, and now a second loss again. They were down 2 bodies yesterday, but it was a tight game. 12 points, Ballymac are safe. So Ballymac don't have to worry, but they won't be claiming the County League or anything. But Neamagillagh and Stacks is intriguing in the final round, Donal. And you have Spar against Ballymac. Ballymac have nothing to play for. Spar are on 9 points, so they could win that and go up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
Kilcommon and Rathmore, that's an East Kerry derby. Rathmore need the points there. And you have Dingle. Desmond's are home to Dingle. You'd be expecting Dingle to win that. And what about Cairns O'Reilly's? Do they need the points at home to Legion? Legion certainly needs them. Neamagill and Stacks, I spoke about. And Milltown Castlemaine, they'll have nothing easy against Crokes. And to throw one more spanner in the works, as it were. What happens if, for example, we don't want it to happen, but Kerry Legion Saturday to Tyrone? All the county players will be back for July the 9th, the following Sunday, that weekend. And that would mean that the likes of Dingle would be getting Barry Dan, Paul Ganey, Tom O'Sullivan, Crokes would have Gavin White back, Shane Murphy, Michal Burns. That could change the whole complexion of this relegation and league final. But one thing is guaranteed, Donal. In Division 1, there will be playoffs in difference. You cannot see anything other than a 3- or 4-way playoff for those final 2 relegation spots in the top flight.
Yeah, it's hugely, hugely close, Mort, to be fair. I suppose Desmond's, I won't say they threw in the towel, but they found it tough early on. But all the other teams went through different periods where they lost 2 or 3 games in a row and then managed to win 2 or 3 games in a row and picked up 6 points. Come here, if that's the drama about going down, who's most likely to go up from Division 2?
Well, that's more or less already decided. By the way, very important to emphasise, for teams that finish level, it'll never be on points or scoring difference. It will always be on playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that is why players and clubs need to look at the ORA or look at the fixtures plan and see that July is set aside. The 9th is the last round of fixtures, and then the 16th, 23rd, and the 29th or 30th. Those three Sundays are set aside for league relegation and promotion playoffs. So it basically, Don, you could call July the County League month.
Mm-hmm. Now, put your hull isn't hold.
Yeah, exactly. Low Rangers are up. They're on 15 points after 10 games. Glenfresk are on 15 points. They're promoted to the top flight. And Ungerthuk on 15 points are promoted to the top flight. Those three teams, the Gael are on 12 points with a game left. They can only reach 14. So we know who's coming up. And Low Rangers, Glenfresk and Ungerthuk in their final round of games are playing teams who have nothing to play for. For example, the likes of Glenfresk are playing Beaufort, and then you have Long Rangers playing Curragh, who are already gone down, and so therefore it would look, and Glenfresk are playing both, as I said, it would look to me as if they will remain locked, and that will mean a semi-final and a final playoff, so the three of them will have to play off. At the other end, St. Mary's, who found the going tough, Brian Sheen at the line out and goes to them, they ended up, they've only a point at the moment. They haven't won a game this year, but they're in transition. Curragh only won one game, they're on 2 points, and Fireys are on 6. The Stow Limits, with a game to play, are on 9, so therefore we know who's relegated as well: Fireys, Curragh and St. Mary's. So basically Division 2 is pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm. If Division 2 is straightforward, Morton, of course you have 2 quick minutes now. It's like basketball, the clock will count down fairly quickly. Division 3, who's moving up?
Division 3 is an absolute nightmare. Absolute. You have no... You see, the problem is there's a back game at 39 games played, and because of the hurling, they're unlikely to be playing shortly. Fossa and Brosna, there's a back game there, and they're playing next Tuesday night. And after that thing, but there's no hope that in the 9th, Atford could be playing Knocknagoshal. Knocknagoshal are on 9 points with 2 games left, so they can actually get to 13. John Mitchell's on top at 14, and their final game is against Atford, who are on 13. So that's definitely a game for later on in July. So John Mitchell's, Atford could go up, Ballydunhill could go up, Churchill could go up, Listry could go up, Fossett could definitely go up, wouldn't rule out Honest Call, they can go to 13 points. Renard to go to 13 points, Knocknagoshal. So only Brosna, Skellig Rangers and Pearson and Drumada. So the Pearson's have gone down, Skellig Rangers and my friend Podge drops the O'Sullivan, he's gone down, and Brosna, if they can win their remaining 2 games, and that includes beating Fossa, they can save themselves. Knocknagoshal are on 9, and I'd expect them to survive there. So it looks like it could be Brosna are in danger in Division 3.
And talk nicely about myself and John O'Dowd's team there in Division 4.
Well, John O'Dowd's team did very well, and he's in the management there. That's why he gave that glowing speech there about the Kerry seniors that would raise the...
Don't be lifting him up to the high heavens now, because I went up one night and St. Michael's Fillmore turned him over, so I don't know, he gave no speech that night.
They were missing 8 or 9 players. Now, Keele topped that, and I have an interest in Keele because I have a nephew involved with them. They're promoted as champions. And Keith Evans, obviously, Evans there, Aidan Duran, all those guys have been playing very well for Keele. Now, Tarbert are on 13, but they're going to Sneem Derrynan in their final game, and you'd be expecting them to win that, so I'd say they'll be promoted. Cardle as well have a handy final game. I'd be expecting Sweden go up.
Are you upsetting Cremon, or are you purposely?
Yeah, well, Cremon, you see, they've had they had a very good time with Houlihan and Darren, isn't it? And what's his name? Dunica Walsh has been playing very well with them, but they lost the game, a big game, and that has cost them. So Michael Spilemore have a game left. They can go to 14, and so therefore they need Tarbert and Cardle to lose, but I can't see that happening. Cardle are playing Cremon, as they say, at home, but there's a big game there. St. Finan's, who are basically Cross O'Neill's in hurling,
right,
are playing Ballyduff. Ballyduff has 8 points. Ballyduff need to win that, because St. Pat's Brinneville will be playing Keele, They may win that field if they play their, you know, reserve players, give the lads in the bench a chance. Pat might win that and go to 8 points to join them. Dr. Crokes, B are gone, and St. Darren and first three are gone as well. So that is tough, that one, Division 4.
Fair play. Well, we don't have time to go to Division 5, Morton. We might do it another night.
Division 5 is straightforward. Division 5 is straightforward.
15 seconds.
Division 5 is Neve Gilla, and I won't explain any more, but the teams are promoted there. There are four of them in contention. There is Waterville, and there is also Lisbowl, and then there's four teams in line for that third spot. Scottaglen, Moyvan, Canoog, are involved as well there. But
there you go, Mort. You're out of time, Mort. You'll get us all fired. But there you go, Mort Murphy, filling us in the County League. We'll go to news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Now, what a couple of months it has been for my next guest, Kevin Cronin, the Kingdom Warrior. You might remember the last time we had him on, we were preparing, of course. I said we, obviously he was preparing, I suppose. We weren't preparing for Kevin. You were, for a shot at the Celtic Light Heavyweight title with highly rated Limerick boxer, of course, Jamie Morrissey. And I suppose he's had a couple of setbacks since then, but like all great champions, he's got back on his feet again. And having overcome the Spanish-based Nicaraguan Santo Moderno only a fortnight ago, he's earned himself a shot at the Irish Super Middleweight title. All fierce, exciting stuff, Kevin. You know, when you talk about titles and winning and moving on, the whole lot. But let's go back a little bit. Last time you were inside here, we were preparing for the Morrissey fight. That has come and gone, and that whole saga and event kind of carried itself. You went up, you fought very, very well the first night in Belfast. I personally thought that you'd done enough to go away with the win. How disappointing was that at that particular moment when I suppose the hand doesn't go up?
Yeah, it was a bit of a kick in the gut, you know. It was a lot of hard nights and days put in for that fight. You know, we trained like crazy. You know, I hardly seen my family. You know, hardly seen my girlfriend either. She'd come home from work, I was going out the door to go, you know, to go to Dublin or go train somewhere else. You know, I had no life, you know. So, put everything into that, and then yeah, to go up there and put on an absolute classic. You know, there was, I don't ever remember a fight on the island, you know, being as dramatic and as, you know, as a war like that one.
And it was a war. I mean, most of us go out in the box and they kind of step back, but I mean, from the word go, you both went at it. You finished very, very strong. He probably started off at 100 miles an hour, but he kind of burnt himself out, I felt.
Oh yeah, it was a great fight. I think it was the first three rounds. Yeah, or the first round he started. I think he caught me with a right hand, and I think he might have just thought I was hurt or something, and he was trying to take me out. Then so the second round he was all guns blazing. Third round he was starting to dip a small bit, and we copped in the corner obviously, and they were just saying, John, just time to step on the gas now and put the pressure on, and we did that, you know, and thought we outclassed him from there. But look, it's the judge, the referee didn't see it that way anyway. Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's about putting the hand up, of course. But you did get a rematch down to Galway, and I suppose another kind of epic fight in a sense. Rare enough that these fights end in draws.
Yeah, very rare. I think there's just something about me and Jamie clashing, you know. Everyone wants, I'd say if you put it on 10 times it'd sell out a venue 10 times, because like as I said, go back to Belfast, it's one of the best, that was probably one of the best wars that's happened in a boxing ring in this island, you know, over 8 rounds, and they said let's do it again over 10 rounds, and I accepted the offer straight away, and obviously it was on television and everything, so it was a brilliant offer. But no one expected it to be a war again. It never happens twice really like that. But I think it was a bit of a smarter war, you know. It was more of a tactical war.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose you had measured yourselves at that stage. I mean, you probably both knew an awful lot more about yourselves.
Yeah.
From those rounds. Those two fights though, while you didn't get across the line, you didn't, they certainly rose your profile.
Yeah, 100%. Look, as I said, obviously I thought I'd done nothing the first fight. Definitely felt hard done by in the second fight. You know, the second fight was again a great fight, but like that, after three rounds I think I dominated, and fight could have even been stopped in later rounds, you know. But again, it is what it is. It was called the draw,
and he hung on.
Yeah, again, another camp that everything was put into, you know. And
the I suppose people listening tonight will say, sure, it was only just one evening and the whole lot. But of course, it's not one evening. I mean, you're talking about the build-up to it. In actual time, how much time goes into preparing for one fight? You're talking about training camps and going away and the whole lot. But realistic time, and you have to balance work as well, which is hugely incredible to do that. But give us a week of what Kevin Cronin does. I mean, everything from what you eat to kind of what you sleep. I suppose you must get rest and train and...
Yeah, well, like when you're talking how long it takes to prepare for something like that, you know, a camp is basically just adjusting for what's coming, you know, adjusting to the opponents in front of you, adjusting to the rounds. Realistically, you know, I've been preparing for that since the day I stepped into a boxing club, like, you know, so, you know, that's a lifetime of training's just gone in for that one moment, you know, so it's a lot more than just a training camp. A training camp is really just to prime you up for two specific things to... in specific ways for
so it's more
adjustments for that fight. Yeah,
you're fit and ready to go.
It's about adjustments. Yeah, but like that, a week. The training is set 6 days, twice a day. You know, and then Sundays off. That's really what it is. And yeah, diet is huge thing. And I love my food, so that's the hardest bit. You know, I don't mind pushing myself in the gym, which I think people always see on fight night. You know, with me, my engine's always tip top. You know, I'm always in the best shape possible. But by God, if I could do it, eating as much food as possible, I would.
We all could do that. Come here, Kevin. Those two fights, okay? They kind of rose the profile. We didn't get a win, but I mean, like, you've got an incredible legion of fans, an awful lot of kind of neutrals as well, seeing you probably fighting for the first time and saying, "God, he was kind of hard done by, or he should have won." And I suppose the name now goes out in a bigger circle, and people are probably more aware of you because your build up to those fights, it was broken up with COVID, and I mean, there was a fight and it was cancelled and the whole lot. But all of a sudden, the fights are beginning to come at huge regularity, and of course, along come your Nicaragua in Santo Moderno. What was the build up to that fight like?
Yeah, I think, obviously, look, at training camp, I trained as hard. You know, I trained as hard for him as I did for the Jamie Morrissey fights. It was obviously going to be a lot of questions on our behalf, you know, moving down a weight class. A lot of people weren't even expecting me to make weight, like, so they thought I was crazy going down to the weight. But I ended up even weighing lighter than Santos at the weigh-ins, you know, and you could see.
What weight would that be? What's the actual?
168 pounds. 168 okay. pounds. I think I came about half a kilo under.
Wow.
Yeah, but like that, we didn't know how I'd actually get. Well, I was obviously confident in myself, you know, but it was a tough weight cut. The refuel was going to be very important.
When you
as well.
Go down a weight, logically you lose a little bit more power, should you, or does that happen?
No, that was just another one of the questions. Like, will I bring the power down? You know, will I gain a bit more power? Not so much gain power, but keep the power. And you know, my resistance might come into play a bit, and I could actually be hitting a lot harder down here, which I find I am. You know, like Santos, the last day, he's technically not great. I don't think he was ever going to beat me, but like that, he's one of the toughest guys, to be honest with you, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's
fought, was able to take the shots.
Like he's fought some of the best guys in the world. He's fought world champions, and he's taken them the distance. I was the fourth Irish guy he fought. One of them being a world champion in Padraig McCrory, light heavyweight, who knocks everyone out, you know. And he brought him to six as well. And that was our question with the power answered there. I was the first Irishman to stop him. You know, I'm one of the only people out there to stop him, to do it in that fashion. Like, you know, I blitzed him from the get go. And I think we answered another question. Is a lot of people, I think, would have been preparing for me as a slow starter because the two Jamie Morrissey fights, whereas I knew in my own head I was questioning. I had no reason to question my tank, but up at light heavyweight, I was in my head all the time, I'm carrying pounds that I don't think I need, you know, and maybe I'll gas if I go too fast. And I always regretted that in the later rounds because my engine's great, you know. But I started that fight fast, and I just kept that pace for three rounds the last day. And look, he clearly couldn't take any more. And I just see an Irish boxing, it was up. It was the longest run of punches in a fight before it was stopped, you know. So I don't even know how many punches landed. There must have been 30 punches landed, you know, and I think it's about 8 or 9 unresponded punches that to wave off a fight. But as I was saying, it was all questions with the refuel, and my strength and conditioning coach and nutritionist Pierre Dunhu was kind of over that, you know. He was by my side, he was prepping my food, you know, he had everything on the ball. The weight cut was tough, he was there, he was giving me the right amount of things at the right amount of time and everything like that to
and,
do it.
And the weight cut that you're on about, I mean, obviously people see it on television and you stand there and you stand on the kilo and everybody looks down, they say, yeah, he's made it or he's a pound over, whatever it is. Do you know ahead of time, are you doing it in your bedroom or whatever, do you know, that we should be good enough? Or are you looking at it in the morning saying, God, I still have to lose another bit, I have to run around the yard a few times? I mean, how close do boxers get to kind of knowing and not knowing?
It's a tricky one. It's a lot of mathematics involved in it, which is what I leave to Peter. He gives me the plan at the start of fight week. We go off of what weight I'm coming into fight week at, which could be 6 kilos over, 7 kilos over the fight weight, you know, and then we'll go off that. We'll be doing our water cut. Obviously the food's going to be chopped away down to eventually nothing, like, you know. Oh. But the water, it's all the water weight, and you'll gauge it throughout the week, but it's hard to gauge. You could very, very easily slip up and come in half a kilo or a kilo over.
So are you talking in terms that, God, I might just drink the wrong bottle of water at the wrong time, and that might be...
Yeah. Like even just to say the day beforehand, when you're checking the weight, you could panic, you know, and you have to stop drinking water at a certain time. You know, you can only drink a certain amount of water in the day, and like all that has to be measured. If you go over by 70 millilitres, like, you know, that could be the difference in 0.2 or 3 in the scales, and that's you missing weight, and that's the title off the line, you know. So it's
remarkable, and I suppose we're talking about it because it's the other side of boxing. Everybody thinks it's just we get in the ring and we off we go and land as many punches as you can, but obviously there's this side to it as well, and there's the training side, and we're talking about the family side as well in a moment, and there's also the work side and the balance and that, and we'll talk about the work side after this break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, welcome back to Terrace Talk. To Donalbury in the chair this evening. And of course, we're talking to Milltown boxer Kevin Cronin, of course, who is the Kingdom Warrior. Actually, it's a funny thing. We never asked you that. Why the Kingdom Warrior? Who taught you that?
It was way boxing with the Munster team a couple of years ago in the amateurs, and we were boxing in this box cup in London. And there's a guy, Martin Keenan, from Limerick, but he was the Irish heavyweight champion in the amateurs. But it was actually him who started. Yeah, we were over there, and he just started shouting, "Come on, the Kingdom Warrior!" I don't even know where he pulled it from. It ended up sticking with him. Any time he met me, it was the Kingdom Warrior, and that started sticking with other people then when you're going away in them types of trips, and it just stuck. My it sounded good too, so I just said, "I keep it."
You'll be as famous the Gooch with his nickname. I mean, all good people have it, but the Kingdom Warrior, yeah, it's a great name. It's a good title. It looks well as well. Another thing that has swelled as well is your support. I see the pictures on the Facebook. You're gone from people going in cars to minibuses to maybe bigger minibuses. It must be great to know that people are, I suppose, you every boxer has their kind of unique family support, but I see my friends down there, and Jimmy O'Brien's, they've gone kind of full-blown support at this stage for you, which is great to see, and it's great for them to rustle up people, but to see them getting in cars and buses and going to fights, that must be really warm.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, I never expected to have the support that I do, to be honest with you. Even coming into now the first few fights, I would have known everyone that's at my fights, whereas I think you could say the two Jamie Morrissey fights changed everything. And you could, well, I don't know if you could hear it from watching it live the last day, but like it was hectic about there the last day. And it's kind of come to after the first Jamie fight, he came to Galway, and then I wouldn't know half the people that were there, and then in Cork again the last day, there's more people. I wouldn't have a clue who they are. Obviously I get to know them in the night, and then I know them, but then it just seems to be growing, and more and more people are showing up, and as you say, yeah, there's buses going, and it's no longer just my family and friends, like, you know, it's everyone really. It is crazy, and it's a good little bunch to follow as well, and
it's a great sign. I mean, it's a sign that people are respecting, first of all, what you're doing, really appreciating the effort that you're making, and probably getting on a journey that, well, so boxing, we don't know where these journeys end, but I mean, it looks like a good long journey, and people are getting on at a good time to follow you, and that brings us up, of course, because you have a shot at the Irish Super Middleweight?
Yeah, the Super Middleweight Irish title, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so obviously I fought Jamie and drew with him for the Irish Light Heavy. we won't go into that, you know, the decision and all that, but it was a draw in the finish.
Just to put it in football terms, it was an umpire not doing his job.
Yeah, a couple of umpires not doing their jobs.
They didn't put the white flag up when they should have put it up, but we've moved on from there now. We've moved on. But I mean, you're setting your sights on something new, exciting. Like I said, you've beaten Centum Merino on the build up to this fight, and it's like you said, you've outlined how tough a fighter he was and how few times Irish fighters have been able to get past him. But talk to us about the title fight. I suppose, are you excited and all that?
Yeah, look, of course I'm excited. It got after that Jamie fight, I announced I'm moving to super middleweight. The Boxing Union of Ireland put out there, if I can successfully beat Santos in my first super middleweight fight, that they'll look into sanctioning me versus Craig, the super middleweight Celtic champion, for the Irish title. And obviously that was a bit of excitement for me, but I couldn't look past what was in front of me, so I had to keep training for that. And then after the fight the last day, Craig hopped into the ring. He went a bit away with the fairies. He grabbed the microphone and started talking, and it was fine to start, you know. He was talking about whatever, good fight and all that, but then he started muttering on a bit, you know, about there's no getting past him. So I did have to put him in his place a little bit. But it's the Boxing Union of Ireland came out that night, tweeted out then that that's it, they've sanctioned it. So that's what's next, the 10 rounds for the Irish title again.
And of course, the Craig is Craig McCarthy you're on about, of course, and he's, I suppose, the current champion. But 10 rounds, I mean, that's a big jump up from the 6, even though you fought 3.
Yeah, well, it was just, there was 6 the last day. It was 3 rounds, obviously, but the fight before that was 10 rounds at light heavyweight. And to be honest with you, I gotta give props to Craig. I didn't think he'd take the fight. I don't think there'd be many take the fight, looking at how the Jamie fight went down the stretch in the 10 rounds. I knew how it was going to go down the stretch in the 10 rounds, because I know what I can do in 10 rounds, and I know I can do it a lot better down at a more comfortable weight for me now.
The way you do fighting, and like you said, you started 100 miles an hour yourself the last night, but you kind of finish very strong. I mean, you kind of I won't say give up the first couple, but it takes a while to get going. But round 3, 4, 5, 6, you really begin to take control, and you seem to finish very, very strongly.
Yeah, but the thing about going down to super middleweight is I now feel more comfortable starting fast, which is what I showed the last day. So now it's going to be gone from 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know. So that's the plan, and I know I can go all day, you know. I could do 12 rounds at that pace with a good camp, you know, the right adjustments. Obviously Craig's southpaw, he's a big guy for the super middleweight division as well. I'm a small bit taller than him, but like I'm an awful size for super middleweight. Like, he is a big super middleweight, and he was, I'd say, seen in the ring there in front of me last day, he looked like he was about 90 kilos. He's a big bloke, like, John, he can bang. But like that, I know I'm better than him. And yeah, he's made it a war of words. Obviously something I'm not too keen on, but look,
but
it is what it is. You gotta adjust to what's in front of you, know.
You come across as a very quiet, modest fellow, but I presume the way boxing goes, you probably have to find that little side show as well for you.
I'm happy to go through a camp if I never spoke one word with my opponent, but at the same time, I'm not going to let him step on my toes, you know, and chat whatever he's chatting on social media. So, you know, you got to stand your ground too, and can't let people walk over you. But look, at the end of the day,
and of course, the boxing world, like every other sporting world, it's gone onto the social media side of things now. Before, you'd probably just have a few banter words against, you probably wouldn't meet, but of course, sure, you could tag yourselves all night long on social media and the whole lot. But of course, for your perspective, it's standing your ground, standing up for what you respect. You deserve to be where you are. You fought very hard to get here, and I suppose it's just looking for respect. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, well, look, at the end of the day, it's the title. That's all I care about. I don't care what else is going on. I don't care what Craig's saying, anything like that. I win this title, I have my top 15 European ranking. That's what I want, you know. I've said it long enough, I'm going chasing down that European title, and you know, it starts here. I'm straight into the top 15 when I win this title.
And of course, that's how important the Irish title is. It is a ticket to the Europeans.
Yeah, you see, it's the Irish title is a lot bigger than other nations' titles. Like, you know, it can give you that ranking. That's because of the quality of fighters in Ireland, and I think that goes to show the level I'm at. Like, you know, even at light heavyweight, shouldn't have been there, but I was still nearly the Irish champion. Probably should be the Irish champion in it. Like, you know, but now I get
the
chance.
I get
the chance to do it here. You know, one fight into super middleweight, and I'm already jumping in with the champion. You know, it's showing that I don't care who's put in front of me. You know, there's no one else doing it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, I like Craig. You know, he is a good guy. But at the end of the day, I just think I'm gonna be too much for him. And there's a lot of people saying different, but I do think I'm gonna be way too much for him. And I think I'll blitz him, to be honest with you, especially down here at super middleweight.
Fair play to you. My God, almighty. You could nearly give a team talk in a jail room. Two great team talks tonight. Come here, something else away from boxing, but it's still a fight. And of course, you are a fireman. Are you stationed in Tralee, is it?
Yeah, I'm based in Tralee.
Yeah. A lot of news lately about the whole fire, and I see them on the news marching in and out of unions and the whole lot in the strike. Talk to us a little bit about that fight and how important that is for you, obviously, and you know how you control a little bit more light in that, I suppose, through your social media and your media side. But for people listening tonight, what's that battle about? What's that fight about?
Yeah, so like obviously my job as a firefighter is something I always tried to kind of keep off my social media and all that. I never tried using my job or anything for publicity, you could say. But yeah, it's like I'm in the fire brigade 4 years. There's guys there, you know, 20 plus years that have been fighting since the day they got in. I think it's 2001 is when they started fighting, but nothing's happened. Like, and they've only started gaining ground recently, and obviously with the strikes and all. And I think people looking in are probably looking, they're thinking they're fighting for money all of a sudden, but you know, there was just no noise made really until recently. But yeah, like it's just people that, again, people don't see the side to a firefighter.
I suppose it's like all jobs, we don't appreciate firemen until they come out and put the chimney fire out for us, or you come to a disaster, or you need it for
exactly, that's kind of when you see the firemen. But at the same time, outside of even being out with a call, you have to be within 5 minutes of the station. So I can't leave Tralee, you know. I'm not from Tralee, you know. I rarely see my family, you know. I see them at the fight for the first time in probably 2 months.
Wow.
You know, like even God, Christmas, the last four Christmases, I've sat at home alone in Tralee because I have to be within 5 minutes. Like, obviously, me and my girlfriend moved into Tralee, but I wouldn't make her stay in Tralee on Christmas Day, you know, just sitting there alone with me. You know, I couldn't do that, so that's what I have to do, you know, just sit there. And that's just me from my perspective. Mm-hmm. This family is just guys there, have children, so like the pager goes off, they have to get the children to the mother. So again, it's not just the firefighter, it's the mother, that she can't go shopping, you know, she can't do anything like that without taking the children, because the husband, or even if it's the opposite way around, the wife, maybe if the wife's the firefighter, you know, the partner has to be there the whole time, or within a certain distance, to get the children to them, because they have to go. I mean, the pager goes, you have to go. There's nothing else. So it's a family thing, it's
unique tonight, because a lot of people, while they might know firefighters, neighbours, the whole lot, they probably don't fully appreciate the story, and particularly the story of what you're fighting for, and deservedly fighting for, and trying to change it as well. And listen, that's one fight that we certainly wish you all the very best to look with, because I mean, at the end of the day, you're Kerry, you're Galway, or it doesn't really matter, it's an Irish fight, that is.
Yeah, 100%. And look, obviously it's something, as I say, I try not to get too much into, but obviously I'm going to push this one a bit as well on my social media with the last few weeks, because like it's something that really needs to change. Yeah. You know, and it's just a bit crazy, because even recently, you know, you see where a lot of money is going, you know, going missing, supposedly can't be seen going places, you know.
Myself but and Ivan are getting well paid, I think.
But like then to turn around and say there isn't money there to fill the fire stations with more staff, so you can have a day off with your child every 2 weeks, you know. Obviously, look, I don't have a child, I haven't seen that side of it yet. Obviously, look, I have no life anyway with boxing, but that's my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only kind of, since the last fight, it's the first break I've really had, and I've had a rest now for 2 weeks, and I've really, really felt this is the first time I've sat back and seen this is crazy, because obviously everyone with me is strict anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 2 weeks, I can't see how the other guys are doing it with children and everything. It's something really needs to change there.
Yeah, well, listen, we certainly wish you the very best of luck on that fight, and of course we wish you the very best of luck with the Craig McCarthy fight. And of course we had no time to talk about the venue or the time or where it's going to be, but it's certainly going to be in the calendar. It's certainly something that we're certainly not going to miss, and we wish you the very, very best of luck. It's great to have you on again, Kevin. I have to say, every night you come on, has the hair colour changed a small bit?
I'm going grey from all the boxing.
Yeah. Certainly changing every time we come in, a different haircut.
It's a bit brighter during the summer.
Maybe it's just a summertime haircut. But listen, we wish you the very best. Looking at, of course, is Kevin Cronin, the Kingdom Warrior, named after by a Limerick man. We'll have to drill down that a little bit more as well. Plenty more coming in. Case for the clock stop is in the ladies. That's a question for the minor game, of course. And Monaghan scored their goal well into injury time as well. And of course, that came up early in the conversation as well, and also there'll be a rule brought in for the age change from 17 to 18. That's all about minors. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now it's time to turn our attention to our Women in Sport production that we run every week, and it's a great production as well. Produced, of course, by Joe McGill and Connie Broderick, and in tonight's episode, we'll hear from basketball superstar Áine McKenna out there in Douai, and in addition to representing Ireland, of course, which she's done several times, she's won 10 Super League titles, and believe it or not, she has 8 National Cup titles. This is her story.
This documentary was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
I probably love the team aspect of it, I think. The team aspect, and I'm just a really competitive person with sport. So I would say that's probably what it was. I played a lot of sport when I was younger, but I suppose I got good at basketball quicker than I got good at the others, and that's kind of what I stuck with then. But yeah, it's probably the team element of it.
In this episode of Kerry Women in Sport, we hear the story of basketballer Áine McKenna. The Irish international has captained the legendary The Address UCC Glenmire Club to numerous national titles, picking up many individual awards along the way. This is her story.
Áine McKenna, Douai. I grew up in the countryside in Douai, went to Douai National School. So that's the first place where I picked up a basketball, I suppose. Was mad for anything sport. My brother used to play with Douai football team, and we used to go to all his games, and I think that's where I picked up most of my competitiveness from, and from watching them. We used to go to all the Kerry games. My mum, my dad would bring me to, I'd say, every Kerry game possible when we were younger. We still go to them. So I'd say that's where I picked up my love of sport and competitiveness, and I was mad for it then. We used to actually have, we had an outdoor basketball court in Douai. It's still there to this day, and they used to run a league at lunchtime, and that's basically where I first picked up a basketball, and I'd say that's why I was mad for it. Going to school every day, I was looking forward to that at lunchtime every single day. And I suppose as well, community games played a huge part in it. You know, Nealis Collins is still doing fantastic work there in Douai with community games, and Claire Sheehy would have been my first coach in Douai with the community games. So that what probably would have been the other side of it then, outside of school, within the community. You know, community games was massive, and Claire Sheehy used to put in an awful lot of time into training us. We had a very good team. And it was interesting then, because half of us went to Presley-Stowell and the other half went to Abbey Field, so we kind of got split up then a little bit. But community games would have been a huge part of my playing days when I was younger. Like, and I kind of we did everything with community games. We did soccer. I think we actually got to an All Ireland community games final in Olympic handball, which was a strange one. I think did we lose the final in the end? But that was a different one back then, like, that we used to be playing as well. Back then they used to have the games on, I know they're on TG Cahir now, but they used to be on RTE back then, and I remember on a Sunday. So yeah, I would have seen a couple of games. I remember always watching Michelle Aspel and Michelle Fahey and those. So they definitely would have been two that would have stuck out in my mind. But Yeah, probably would have been from that night. I genuinely do think it was just from playing that lunchtime basketball out in the outdoor courts in Douala was where my love for it came from.
When Anya went to secondary school, this is where her love of the game was really developed and nurtured.
When I went on into Presnell Stowe, Gerard Tarrant, who'd be an international coach, he was a PE teacher there. So I obviously had a phenomenal coach in him, and you know, I suppose the training that he put us through was to a very, very high standard, because he was coaching the Irish team, and you know, he was well used to the standards that you need to get to as a player, and I suppose I experienced that from very early on in first year. You know, like, I never played with a club until I went to college in Cork, so for me, like, having Gerard Tarrant coaching me when I was in first year, and I suppose I probably made the under 16 and the under 18 Irish team without having played with a club because of him, you know. So it was huge to have such a great coach in my life very early on, like in first year. So it was brilliant.
Gerard Tarrant had a big influence on Anya in those early years. So what made him so good as a coach?
I think it was just he had very, very high standards. You know, training was always very tough. You had to be on time, you had to be there, you know, you had to be committed. I think, yeah, that was the big thing. You know, he did set really high standards, and I suppose just his drills and things that he had, you know, he put a huge emphasis on the fundamentals of dribbling and shooting, and you know, all the things you need to play, to pick up a basketball. But I really think it was that. It was probably his high standards and zoning in on the importance of your fundamentals and being very, very good at those.
In the Presnell Stowe, Anya was part of a very successful team.
Yeah, we were. I think we won the first and the second year league, I think, when we started off. But I think we lost a couple of cup games then as we got older in under 16 and under 19. But we had a very, very good schools team. We would have done very well in Kerry every year. We would have had a lot of games at Mount Hawk and Mercy Mount Hawk, and thinking back now. But we would have had a lot of games there against the girls in Tralee. And it was interesting then as well when we would have maybe come up against the girls that I played against or within Douala National School, you know, when we played against them. So it was interesting. It was tough to play against them after that.
Through all this success, it wasn't long before Anya was called to represent her country at national level.
I remember actually we used to get letters out in the post that time. So it wasn't an email, it was a letter out in the post. You'd be waiting for it, and when you come home from school, you know, it was a huge thing for me back in the day. An under 16 level was the first time that I made it. I think Joe Shields from Galway was the coach. And it was very, very competitive. You know, there was only 12 made the team out of a panel of maybe there was 30 to 40 training at some points, you know. So it was very, very tough. And for me, I suppose it was a huge achievement because I wasn't part of a club, whereas all the other girls had that chance of being part of a club and playing. Probably more often they were playing than me because I was only playing school games. So I was very, very lucky, as I said, and it was a huge achievement for me back then, you know, and it gives you a huge push going forward to try and make the under-18s then and try and keep up your level and continue to improve yourself, you know, once you make that team.
Parents and family are often the unsung heroes when it comes to successful athletes. So what was it like for Anya's family when she became an Irish player?
Yeah, I'd say it was great, because I'd say my mom was sick of dropping me into the Stowe Community Centre going training. We used to train like for a school team. We used to train on Saturdays and everything. So that was huge commitment from Gerard Tarrant there as well, you know, as a teacher in the school. But my mother was definitely delighted because she'd be getting rid of me then for weekends, because we used to be training up in Dublin, so we'd be staying with host families and things like that. And you know, there'd be a couple of us and we'd head off in the train or the bus, and so it'd be a nice break for her for the weekend, I'd say, from dropping me to all the places and dropping me to all the matches. But yeah, it's a huge commitment for parents as well to be able to take you to all the games and take you to all the trainings. Huge commitment.
When Anya went on to college in UCC, she joined her first basketball club.
I finished my Leaving Cert in 2007, and I went to UCC then studying PE and maths, and I'm basically in Cork since, even though I'll always be a Kerry woman, but I'm in Cork since. So I came across Glanmire because the coach, my current coach, Mark Scannell, he actually rang me and spoke to me about the club and about the team and about playing with them. And I think I had known him kind of from, because his daughter would have played on the Irish team with me, so he kind of had an idea, and he would have, you know, he would have known Gerard Tarran from the coaching circles as well. So that's probably how it came about. Mark would have approached me, and then I suppose I joined Glamour, and it was interesting that there was phenomenal players there when I went in training the first day. You know, people that you would have seen on the TV only a couple of months earlier, like Michelle Fahey was there. Denise Walsh from Kerry, from Coro, she was there. She was fantastic point guard. She used to play for Glamour as well. Then there was Niamh Dwyer was there, Grainne Dwyer was there. There was just loads of people who you would have looking up to seeing on the TV. So it was a huge step up for me. But it was a great challenge, and I suppose it was something new, and it was something that I always wanted because I didn't have it when I was at home. So it was great to have training then every couple of nights a week, and it was something new for me, so it was great.
In joining UCC Glanmire, Áine was becoming part of what was already a successful team.
I came into a very successful team. They had just won the cup the year previous and the league, so I came into a team, and that year that I started playing with them, that was the first year that I would have been part of cup success and league success. So I kind of tasted it from there on in, and I kind of knew the high standards that they all held themselves to, you know, and what you had to do to get there. And I suppose I was only, 18 at the time, you know, so it was great just to be around those girls and being around, like most of them would have been playing with Ireland, the senior panel at that time, and most of them, like, you would have had the captain, the senior panel, like, you know, it was just great to be around those type of women, and, you know, the dedication and the commitment and the amount of time that they put into the sport, and, you know, the level that they train at, I suppose, is the difference, you know. And I think that's a big thing, that the level of training and the standard of training was really, really high. And I think that kind of started me on my journey then.
In 2016, Áine became captain of the team and has remained in the role ever since.
It was a huge, huge honour for me. I suppose I've been there a long time since I came in 2007, you know, so... yeah, it was a huge honour. I suppose I'm not a very loud person, I would say, at training or anything. I'm more of an encourager, or maybe I lead by example, I suppose, a lot of the time. But I really enjoy it. I think it's a really important role in a team. You know, you have to be there for everybody, and you have to be to get everybody on board and encourage everyone. I think it was since 2016, and I'm still captain now in 2023.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
And welcome back to the show, and now time to tune in to part two of the Áine McKenna story.
You're listening to an episode of Kerry Women in Sport, where we hear the story of international basketballer Áine McKenna. Throughout her career, Áine has won numerous titles with her club, and personal accolades too, including player of the matches and national finals.
I never actually think about it, sit down and go, yeah, I've this many cups or this many leagues. I'm always kind of looking ahead. And whenever I put, like, you know, whenever we finish with a season or whatever, I nearly always put it behind me and nearly forget what games we've won and what we haven't won and that kind of thing, you know.
So throughout all this incredible success, what favourite memory stands out for Áine? One memory is from 2022, when Áine won another cup final.
I've probably two. Last year was definitely one that stands out because it's kind of fresh in my memory. And as I said, I don't dwell on too many things on the past, but last year was a huge one. I actually only watched it there a couple of weeks ago, the cup final, because we didn't get to the final this year, but I watched our one from last year. And we were actually about 15 points down in the last quarter. So it was a phenomenal comeback to come back and win against DCU last year. But we had an incredible team, just an incredible team. For any team to be able to come back from that deficit in the last quarter is unreal. So that's definitely one that stands out in my mind. But then back in, I think it was 2014, we beat a very, very talented UL side. We beat them in overtime. So it was a huge game, and I actually had an injury at the time, my ankle, but I came off the bench during that game and I was able to contribute, so it was brilliant. We actually won in overtime then, so that's another one that sticks out in my mind.
There have been many highlights throughout her career, and some of these have been at international level.
We won a silver medal when we were in Gibraltar. We went to the small nations. When we went to Cyprus there 2 years ago, I actually got injured before the final, so I couldn't play, but we actually lost the final as well. So I have two silver European medals, never got the gold there. But look, every time you wear an Irish jersey is a highlight, to be honest. I think, you know, no matter what game it is, every time you put on that jersey is a huge honour, and there's not really any one that stands out for me, because, you know, there's you put so much, you know, emphasis on it when you put on that jersey. It's just a great honour to be able to wear it.
To be successful for so long and to achieve so much in the game takes a lot of dedication.
Yeah, so we would have a strength and conditioning coach. We train on court 3 times a week. A lot of the strength and conditioning would probably be before the season starts, a lot of that. So there might be a bit of that in each training session then for maybe half an hour. But we train probably 3 times a week, maybe for 2 hours a week every day during training days. And then we have a game, obviously, at the weekend. And our game could be here in Cork, or it could be up the country in Belfast or Dublin or Waterford. So it is busy, you know. You're going maybe 4 or 5 days out of the 7 days in the week. So it is tough. And I always say to the, you know, the professional players that come in, they have a great time, because they'd be wondering what we'd be doing. We'd be off at work every day, coming back and going to training, whereas, you know, they've the life. They don't have to go to work here as such. They're just going to basketball. That's their work. So it is tough, you know. It is a lot of commitment. And you know, I suppose if you have to keep those high standards, you have to keep that many, many times training a week. So it is important.
And how healthy is women's basketball in the current time? And is it getting the recognition it deserves?
I think it's after coming on leaps and bounds the last few years. I think social media has made it a lot easier. You know, Basketball Ireland have a great website. They're constantly on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all the new social media places. But I really think it's come on leaps and bounds. I have to say that TG Cahir, you know, are great, you know, around the time of the cup finals when those are on, or, you know, the Irish senior women's games and the Irish senior men's games, obviously, as well. But they do put an emphasis on the women, and it's great to see, you know, that they have that. And TG Cahir have been huge there in televising the games. And, you know, even sometimes when we were on the TV for the cup final last year, you come back into school and some of the girls in school, you know, the girls that play, you know, they watch the game, and it's great for them to see that. So I think that's a big thing. I think the TV coverage is huge, but social media has definitely made it a lot better. And just, you know, the reports on games, putting out pictures of you know, women in action and women on court, I suppose. And I think the attendance at games has gone up hugely as well. You know, it's advertised a little bit better, definitely. And I think that the professional players add to that, you know, because they're so good to watch. And, you know, when, like, we have one of the top scoring Americans in the league this year, and she's just a joy to watch. I think she scored 52 points in one game. So, you know, all the younger girls in the club are just absolutely delighted to come to see her. And, you know, it's a great showcase for athleticism and women, and, you know, what we can do. But it has come on leaps and bounds. And even from back, like, say, in 2007 when I started, I just think the big thing is social media, even though I know social media has a lot of cons as well. But it makes it so much better for women in sport.
In such a long career, it is not surprising that it is not all high points, and there have been some low moments also.
I have a couple of low points. Some of the losses that stick out in my mind, I remember there just before COVID, we lost a cup semi-final to Colchester. We'd actually beaten them by about 30 points the week before, and we just lost in the cup semi. I think it was by about 7 or 8 points in the end. So that's one that will always stick out in my mind, always. Probably this year, we played Trinity Meteors in the start, the first cup round, and we lost them by 7. No, they went on to lose the cup final in the end, but yeah, it's very current to me at the moment. So we actually were playing them this weekend in the league, and we're both top of the league, so it'll be an interesting game this weekend. But, you know, that still hurts at the moment that we got knocked out of the cup this year.
And what advice would Áine have for young girls and boys that would hope to be successful athletes like Áine?
I think just when you're younger, just play as many sports as you can, you know, go to watch as many sports as you can. That's how I picked up my love for it, I suppose. You know, and then when you do maybe zone in on a certain sport, you know, it's important that you're committed, you're you know, all that, you're dedicated, and you know that you're putting the effort into the sport to get better. And I suppose for me at my age, I suppose there's still plenty of stuff that I can work on. So you know, you can never stop getting better, I would say. So that would be the big thing. But when you're young, I would say play as many sports as you can, get involved in everything.
And when she retires from playing, would Anya turn her hand to coaching, perhaps?
Yeah, I do some coaching in school. So I'm teaching down at Kinsale Community School in Cork, and I do a good bit of coaching there, the boys and the girls. I probably would probably start off more at underage level. You know, coaching takes a lot as well, and I don't know if I would be interested maybe in coaching to a high level, but definitely I think coaching younger kids in the club and things as well, I'd be very, very interested in.
There is no doubt that Anya has had an incredible playing career, and one that is not finished yet. It is clear that even when she stops playing, she will continue to give back to the sport that she has made some amazing memories from. So what does Anya love about the sport that she has dedicated so much to?
I probably love the team aspect of it, I think. The team aspect, and I'm just a really competitive person with sport. So I would say that's probably what it was. I played a lot of sport when I was younger, but I suppose I got good at basketball quicker than I got good at the others, and that's kind of what I stuck with then. But yeah, it's probably the team element of it. Yeah.
So there you go, that brings tonight's show to an end. Finishing up there, our women in sport with Anya McKinnon. What a fantastic athlete she was. Well done to James McCarthy and Rich Dardo for on as well. Great analysis of our sporting hurling championship there in the first part of the show. John O'Dowd as well was on with us. The Kerry Miners, of course, defeated. He told us the backstory to that. And Mark Murphy, of course, finishing up there the first hour with all the County League football roundup, which was vital as well. Kevin Cronin, the second hour, of course, the very best of luck to him. And we will do it all again next week. Not with me, though. Ivan will be here. He'll be taking the desk, moving from producer to presenter. But Keane will still be on sound. And up next is Mary Conroy.